Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, even though the last decade has seen some major reforms globally on issues that are related to women's rights, statistics show that there's still pervasive gender discrimination and violence directed at women, especially in more traditional societies. But even in more progressive societies, women face some form of bias, starting from their homes, in the amount of work that they have to shoulder to maintain a household, to the workplace, where women face disproportionate levels of employment discrimination and disparity in wages. In many societies, women still make way less than men do, even in much more developed Western societies. Researchers say that in some countries, this gender discrimination is still codified in too low, ranging from criminal laws to laws on marriage to property laws to more draconian laws that govern the female body. A recent incident in Morocco highlighted the struggles that many women face as they deal with such repressive laws. Hajar Raisuni, an investigative journalist, was arrested and jailed after she went to her doctor's office seeking treatment. After her treatment, Ms. Raisuni and her fiancé were charged with having premarital sex and an abortion. And the issue gained international attention when thousands of Moroccan women signed a manifesto speaking out against the arrest of Raisuni. At issue was Article 490 of the country's penal code. That article stipulates that, quote, persons from opposite gender who are not legally married and have sexual relations are punishable by 1 month to 1 year in prison. Raisuni was sentenced to 1 year in jail, and even though her sentence was later commuted by Morocco's King Mohammed VI, it did not stop young Moroccan women to continue their demand for changes in laws that guarantee individual freedoms. They were basically saying that if the Constitution guarantees equal protection and enjoyment of its laws for both men and women, why does it treat women differently? Joining me on the show today are two young Moroccan activists who signed the manifesto. Dina Ben Brahim is a Moroccan artist based in Miami, and Hannah Bezard is a social entrepreneur based in the Moroccan city of Rabat. And we'll get into that conversation with them later on in the show. But first, let's hear from you, our listeners. What do you think about the state of gender equality in your society? Does your constitution guarantee equal protection and enjoyment of laws for both men and women? Or do you see disparities between the laws on the books and how they are actually practiced and enforced to protect women's rights? Stay tuned. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Yes, women of today are struggling, but I think you wouldn't compare their struggles to those of the past. I would say technology has exposed the world to so many things. Let's just look at education. For a woman to make it even in university, she needs a lot of effort. For the women of the past, education was not a priority. Marriage was a priority at that time.
Meanwhile, the world has changed. Everything has changed. We are in a modern world. In the past, we didn't have an internet. In the past, people did not observe some human rights. And this time around, the women have been recognized in as far as human rights is concerned.
And in the past, because women were not empowered, men were abusing them in so many ways. We're not considered as important as men. But now, many girls are educated.
Most of women in Malawi, they are still not employed because we still have this gender gap in our country whereby some women are not considered as material for professional jobs. That's a very big challenge. On that one, I'd say women are suffering because they would look for a job for almost 6 months and then they just get tired and leave it.
Welcome back. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. You were listening to some of your opinions sent in by our listeners on our topic today, our topic of discussion. And we're talking about women's rights in Africa. focusing especially on the recent story from the North African country of Morocco, where a young investigative journalist, Hajja Raisouni, was arrested and jailed after she went to her doctor's office seeking treatment. Ms. Raisouni and her fiancé were charged with having premarital sex. The issue gained international attention when thousands of Moroccan women signed a manifesto speaking out against the arrest of Raisouni. At issue, they said, was Article 490 of the country's penal code. And two of the activists who signed the manifesto joined me for a discussion on gender rights in Morocco, a country that is said to be one of the more progressive countries in the Maghreb region. They say that even though Morocco has been praised for establishing laws that guarantee parity between the sexes, it still has a long way to go, and that this case of Hajja Raisouni serves as an example of that need for change, especially in that Article 490 of the country's penal code. So joining me on the show today are two Moroccan activists who signed the manifesto calling for the scrapping of this article in Morocco's penal code. Dina Benbrahim is an artist based in Miami. She joins me on the phone with Hanna Bezad, a social entrepreneur based in the city of Rabat in Morocco. So Hanna, let me start off with you. Can you tell us about how this manifesto got started? Just give us a little history.
Well, it started with the case of the very case of the journalist Hajja Raisouni, who got arrested after she had an appointment in the clinic, and she obviously sought medical assistance there. She was there with her fiancé, and she was then taken by the police to a different place, and they had her go through an invasive medical examination, and the case started like this. She's very known, so she's a public figure, when one can call her. Basically, we learned about the manifesto through WhatsApp groups. And yeah, and I read the text, and it resonated very much with what I believe in. I think it was more than overdue that a civil movement would start.
What does the manifesto say? What are some of the main points?
The manifesto says that we're in solidarity with all those women that, and all those men as well, who, but it's mostly women who are prosecuted and who are in a position of vulnerability, that are attacked by obsolete laws. Manifesto says, basically, we're all outlaws because these laws are obsolete.
What has been the reaction of the government and also the general public?
I think the general public was very surprised that such a civil movement would start. As you might know, Morocco is one of those Arab countries that very few civil movements have started in the recent period. I think Moroccans are only starting now to learn how to express their general opinion and to understand their power to change the system. So about the reaction of the government, to my best knowledge, there weren't any obvious public reaction to the manifesto. I think they're just very quiet and they're waiting to see what's gonna happen. Only a few, I'd call them courageous public figures, took position. For instance, Ahmed Rida Shami, who's the chief of the Council for the Economic and Social Environmental Council of Morocco. He took a position against these laws and in solidarity with Hajja. But yes, I feel like it's been disturbing for a lot of people how this movement was created and how it gained traction, because in only one day, it went from 490 signatories to about 3,000, and in 1 week, 7,000, and to this day, it's 11,000 people that signed it.
Was that something that surprised you guys?
I just want to add to Hannah's thought that not only, we had more than 11,000 signatures, and of course, it is surprising, but it also gave them hope, and a platform to host more humanity. And basically, the campaign acted as such in the sense that people were taking, visuals and reinterpreting them the way they wanted to. They created artwork, they put the logo on it. It's like they took the campaign as theirs and they put it as their own voice, which was really magical. The true magic of this campaign is how people took it, you know, and made it their own.
Right. So let me ask you this, Dina, and then maybe Hannah can also chime in on this one. How does Morocco compare to other countries in the Maghreb? Would you say that even by having such a space to dissent, that in a way that Morocco is ahead of other countries in that region?
I'm not sure Morocco is ahead of other countries, to be honest. Like, we are still battling for these laws. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been doing this, you know? And I think, I mean, the Middle East in general and North Africa, I feel like we have still a really, really long journey towards personal freedoms.
Yes, to add to Dina's point, to me it's very clear that we're not ahead at all. If I had to compare with other countries from the Maghreb, I think Tunisia is doing much better, not necessarily in terms of law advancement, but in terms of mindset.
That's true.
I think Tunisians are doing really well at keeping up to the best possible state the legacy of their heritage in terms of women's rights. And we in Morocco, we feel that we're stuck at this point. Nothing has moved, or very few things have moved on the legal aspects since the so-called new Mudawana, the family rights in 2004. Actually, only one thing happened in 2018, and it was the law against gender violence. And even this one was very much expected and has deceived a lot because it doesn't address all crimes.
Mm.
Like rape, like marital rape, it doesn't address it at all.
Okay. Also, just remind our listeners, Hannah is a techpreneur based in Morocco, was in Casablanca, currently in Rabat. If you want to check out a story about her journey in entrepreneurship, please check out our website, voanews.com, and also our social media platforms on Facebook. But Hannah, we talked about business at the time, entrepreneurship. I want to get your feeling on this. And are there aspects of Moroccan life, whether politically or economically, that give a young woman like yourself, like Dina, more opportunities to strive? For example, how hard is it to run for office or to open a business?
I'd say I'll give you my experience as an entrepreneur. Whenever I came back to Morocco, as you know, I'm a repatriate entrepreneur. This summer, I moved to Casablanca, and there was a huge case of a rape in a bus. No one in the bus had moved to help this young lady that was being raped live. Some people actually filmed it. And the whole summer, you had a series of similar videos going on the social media. And it was such a shock for me because it was that very summer that I chose to come back to Morocco. And I thought, wow, so I'm landing in this space. This is where society is at right now. And it was very much of a shock. It frightened me. Coming from Europe, I was expecting to be, you know, obviously adapting to many aspects of life here, but able to take or use the public space without fearing to be bothered or to be raped. Mm. So this was the context, and I think it has very little thing to do with the other context of setting up a business. But I have to say that, yes, I do feel barriers all the time based on gender discrimination. When I went to the centre de CRI in Casablanca to get my paperwork to launch my company, I do feel that the service was not the best because they're not expecting a young woman to show up and say, I'm going to start a company, this is what I'm bringing, I'm taking a worldwide franchise for coding. And, you know, that's just the reality. Now, to be honest, I try to completely forget about this, to focus on the work and prove all the many situations in which I was very much discriminated against, because I feel like this is a daily struggle, and with this daily struggle, maybe we're changing things, challenging stereotypes. But I have to say that it's also tough, because the freedom that you're gaining in becoming an entrepreneur, and getting to show or make decisions every day that have an impact and bring value to the economy and place Morocco somewhere on the map in terms of tech innovation, all of this is in complete dissonance with my civil rights. And that, I have to say, is very tough.
Yeah, go ahead, Dina. Go ahead.
I relate so much to that. I think especially to the public space and how we are considered in the public space, because, you know, essentially the public space is male one. And we live in I don't live in Morocco anymore, but when I did, I mean, it is a patriarchal society, and it really results as a guarantee of this paternity, in the sense that it is vesting in the men's control of female sexuality, which means that we really don't belong in the public space, but as citizens, of course we do. And I think, considering the law, you know, there is this belief that Islamic law isn't, you know, compatible with
women's rights.
With women's rights, exactly. And so there is this degradation of moral standards if we were to have this right, which is complete nonsense.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Everybody
run, run, run. Wait in the shelter, people, you listen to Jackson Vanganyi on The Voice of America. Someone nearly died. Someone just died.
But let's take on how many they come. African music mix. Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.
This is Upfront on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. We're talking to two young Moroccan women activists, Hannah Bezard and Dina Ben Brahim. They're talking to me about the manifesto that was signed by Moroccan women calling for the scrapping of Article 49 of the country's penal code, and also calling for the Constitution to guarantee equal protection and enjoyment of the law for both men and women. Hannah, is it enough to pass laws that protect you as a young woman if society, as you say, as a whole, is still very much traditional? Basically, how much of these laws reflect the level of social progress or lack of it, for that matter?
As much as I believe very much in the power of the civil movement, and every word of this manifesto resonates with me, I have to say that it's not the case for everyone around me, despite them being and feeling liberal. I asked a few friends who are directors of innovative hubs to hold conversations around the manifesto at their place, and their immediate reaction was, listen, I'm not ready for this. I came back to Morocco to engage again with this country, with my homeland. I set up this business, but I'm not ready for this. And it came as a shock to me, because I felt like these people who, you know, gained experience abroad, and I'm talking about men in this case.
Right.
They gain experience abroad. They live in a very liberal way. And
they should be able to show solidarity at least to some of these struggles.
But you know, they can't really matter
take
in
a sense around this case, because it doesn't attack them directly, because they're kind of fine still lying around the way.
Dina, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I just think it doesn't really matter, in the sense that it is just time to make tough decisions and overcome, you know, this kind of slowing down the mindset, you know, in the sense that every single thing that made a change in history started with a few people mm. who truly believed in the notion of change and, you know, in just being transformative for the entire society. I mean, if we had to talk, for instance, about the U.S., I mean, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, just happened more than 220 years ago, where just a group of men gathered in the street and launched what America's experiment in democracy is today. If we, these examples like happen all along history in like every single thing. In 2000, for instance, after years of civil war and hundreds of thousands of deaths, the women of Liberia, both Muslims and Christians, they put a stop to it. And again, it just starts with a small number of people who truly believe that it is time to change, and then change happens if it is consistent.
I totally agree with you, Dina, on this. I mean, if you look at the theory of change and other examples that give hope, for sure there is hope. And this case has been very much discussed, and the manifesto has been very much discussed. And I think it's unprecedented in the history of Morocco. So absolutely, it's beautiful. What's happening is beautiful. But at the same time, and maybe it's because I'm here in Morocco and I'm living here every day, and so I see injustices every day, so I'm getting a little bit impatient. I'd love for these conversations to happen for real in Rabat.
Are there spaces for these type of conversations? And if they're not, what are some of the conditions you need for you to create such spaces?
Well, I think to spark change, you need belief and agency. And belief starts from the human and very authentic place in someone. And then agency starts by just giving tools to act and ensure that this belief doesn't die. And so agency opens up the possibility for people to be a transformative force. So I think we need both. I need people who can act and like have this platform. And I think the manifesto was a start of this platform, and I think we need people to believe in it.
So do you believe this is a start of a bigger movement for social change?
I think so. I would like to think so. I hope so.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Two for the money. Three for the honey. Four for the four when you shake your bum.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganya. We are talking to Dina Benbrahim and Hannah Bezard, both activists and social entrepreneurs who are part of the thousands of Moroccan women who signed a manifesto that was calling for the scrapping of Article 490 in the country's penal code. Article 490 that punishes people for having consensual sex outside of marriage. Now, my guests say that even though women in Morocco have obtained some level of equality, legally speaking, that there's still rampant discrimination that continues in practice. And that's one of the reasons that they were compelled to sign this manifesto. Hannah, you're in Rabat, right?
Yes, sir.
How much of this manifesto is part of the daily conversation?
You know, in my daily life, I think, obviously this manifesto, I talk about it every day because people call me every day on this or talk to me every day on this, telling me how courageous it is to put yourself out there. I'll tell you what, as soon as I signed the manifesto, the next day I looked at the Arabic version and I decided to do this little exercise with my mother. I read the manifesto so she can correct a little bit my Arabic because I sometimes have this French accent from living so long in France. After the manifesto, she truly believes in it. She's a feminist. She wrote her thesis about women's position in the Moroccan society through French literature. She was so afraid because it could happen anytime that
you know, maybe not now, but maybe in 6 months from now, we will invent another case around something very, very different,
yes.
or you won't get funding because you spoke about this, because you put yourself out there and it's very public.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm curious to know how the older generation of women, your mothers, your grandmothers, who have lived all their lives in such an environment, what is their general attitude towards your manifesto and your cause? Because as much as these patriarchal societies are driven by men who craft these policies, women are also often considered the kind of the gatekeepers or enforcers in some ways of these cultural standards on how a woman should behave in society.
I mean,
they are very much.
They know that we live in a big life, but they also, I mean, at least for my family, but at the same time, you know, this is a call for dignity, and of course there is this fear behind it of what could happen. How can they, you know, get to you at some point? But what are you going to do? Like, just keep silent? They believe in it the same way because they've been through it or they've seen it, or, you know, it's like, it happens. It's there. It's just that we are all lying to ourselves and others. It's like we're living in a fiction, in something that just doesn't exist. Basically, this manifesto just asks for people to speak the truth.
So I had conversations with women that are my mother's generation, that are 70, other women that are 50, and they're all very supportive in the idea, in the essence of the approach. But they're very afraid, and they're also very tired because they've seen so many cases and so many attempts. And I think, you know, we might be underestimating the impact on the mental health of people of this general context. It really puts everybody down, and it reduces their capacity to see. Or align with their beliefs. That makes me sad. Knowing, you know, I've seen my mother's reaction, and she 100% believes in it. But she's seen so many cases of injustices that she's like, it's not even worth it.
But also your mother, as an educated woman, might be an outlier. She does not represent the majority of Moroccan
That's
women.
Very true. That's very true.
But it's not because you're not, it's not because you're intellectual or you're not, that you're not going to think this. I also talked to a woman who helped us, and she had no education whatsoever, and she still supports it, you know. It just doesn't, it's not about education really, in the sense of like getting degrees, but it's more about, it's about time to just change things. And of course there is still this fear, but I just want to make sure that it's not about really being the intellectual elite,
right? I like that point.
I'd like to add something to this.
Yes,
actually this movement is very much about social justice. It has nothing to do with the upper class, because the upper class can manage to go abroad and can manage to immigrate in the most favorable conditions if they have a need for it, regarding their protecting their own civil rights. It's not the case for the vast majority of Moroccans. So this movement is very much about protecting the average Moroccan women that cannot afford to have an abortion in the best conditions, that are healthy for them, that are protective of their life.
And that's it for our show today. Many thanks to my guests, Dina Ben-Brahim and Hannah Bezad. Dina is in Miami and Hannah is in Rabat, the Moroccan city of Rabat. And thanks to you, our listeners, for being part of this important conversation today. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. You can connect with me on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm at Upfront Africa. You can also check out our show page at vonnews.com. We are also on Facebook. Check out our page, like, subscribe, and share with your friends. Until next time, goodbye.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. This one, I, yeah, yeah. This one, I, yeah, yeah. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. In Iraq today,